That'll work, right? Yeah. Okay, before I begin, I just want to take a quick second just to say a few words about VBS. I was the director / station leader for the middle school, and like Rachel said, we have outgrown our building. Tuesday, the 5th through 8th graders, we had 47 kids alone, which it's amazing. It's great. And nothing to do with me, you know, it's all on God. We are just here to work for them, and I love that Rachel was making a point about our opportunities, and that's what today's message is about. It's about looking for God's opportunities. So today we're continuing with the narrative of Joseph, and we are going to begin to see that his life is taking a turn for the better this time. And in my opinion, this life of Joseph is one of the best rags-to-riches stories ever. Now, I'm sure that some of us can think of someone in our life who is focused heavily on how to get ahead in life, how to succeed. Maybe they jump from one job to another just to find a better situation. And they're always looking for the get-rich-quick schemes. However, they aren't really willing to put in the work, or they are blaming the world for their struggles that they find themselves in. They're blaming others, whether it's justified or not. And they end up carrying that bitterness. They end up carrying that resentment with them forever. And because of this, they are unable to let it go. And they're unable to forget what the world has done to them. And when they finally have the opportunity, they are sure to get what's theirs. They're sure to get their pound of flesh, no matter what the cost to themselves or the cost to others around them. Now, in the beginning of this chapter 44 in Genesis, we are confronted by Pharaoh's two dreams, the first being the account of the 7 sleek and fat cows and that were eaten by the 7 ugly and gaunt cows, and the second dream was of the 7 healthy heads of grain that were swallowed up by the 7 thin and scorched heads of grain. Now, as we know, Pharaoh sent for his magicians and his sorcerers to have his dreams interpreted. And according to the Exodus account, we know that these magicians did actually have some power. And this is shown by the mimicking of when Moses turned his staff into a snake, and then Pharaoh's sorcerers did the same, turning their staffs into snakes. But these powers are satanic powers. And the dream that God sent and his power only could have been interpreted by Joseph through God. I mean, by God through Joseph. Now, at this time, Joseph had been in prison and been a servant of Pharaoh's captain of the guard for a very long period. And we know for certain it's been 2 years alone since his encounter with the cupbearer and with the baker. And he's actually been in Egypt at this time for about 13 years. Now, all this time, the cupbearer, meaning the 2 years, the cupbearer failed to mention Joseph to Pharaoh. Now, I imagine if you were in that situation, you would probably harbor some resentment toward that cupbearer. But we will see that Joseph does not. See, his faith should remind us that if we ever feel forgotten or used, that we shouldn't be surprised by the ungratefulness of other people, and we shouldn't be full of bitterness. But we should be wary for opportunities to come and to trust that God's hand is at work in our lives. Now, the cupbearer, at this point in time, begins to recognize his own failure and his own shortcoming. And he finally tells Pharaoh about Joseph's ability and how Joseph interpreted his own dream. So Pharaoh sends for Joseph, and Joseph is taken before him to interpret his dream. Now, here is Joseph's chance. He's brought before the ruler and the chief authority of the land. This is his moment, the time he's been needing to set things straight. That's if he can. Maybe he'll go along with Pharaoh's desires just so that he can get out of prison. Or maybe he might even be so bold to set the record straight that he was unjustly imprisoned. But what does he do? He gives all glory and all recognition back to God. Now in verse 15 and 16, Pharaoh tells Joseph that he had a dream that no one can interpret, and was told that he, meaning Joseph, will be able to interpret it. Now again, this is Joseph's moment, his chance to shine, his chance to get out of the situation he's in. He's just got to bring it all to himself. But what does he do? No, he doesn't take that moment. He says, because it's not his to take. So Joseph replies to Pharaoh's questioning about if he can interpret the dream, and Joseph simply says, I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Then Pharaoh relays his dreams to Joseph. So this point in the story reminds me of a book that I've been reading, and it's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's kind of ironic being today's Father's Day, but this book was written by Robert Kiyosaki. In it, he talks about the unwillingness of people have to jump at opportunities. This is much due to stubbornness in their lives, the fear of taking a risk, and inversely, the comfort of security. But they still hold on to that bitterness to the world. Even though they're not willing to take those opportunities and jump at them, they still hold on the resentment. They still blame the world because of the situation that they are in. Now, I actually believe that many of our best opportunities will come when we least expect them. Take a moment to think of some of the best love stories. Think of romantic movies, the ones that create long-lasting relationships, the ones that are formed out of spontaneous moments. Or think of individuals that are making millions of dollars in a very short period of time. All of this because of an unexpected right opportunity. Now, the end result, meaning the money or the relationship, isn't the emphasis in this situation. The emphasis is the faith. Faith to say, I'm looking forward. I'm being prepared. I'm trusting in God. So let's go back to Joseph. Think of him. Here he is, brought before Pharaoh from a dungeon. He had no warning of what was going to happen, but he was ready. Not out of his own ability, but he was ready because of his strong relationship with God. Now, Joseph knew that the interpretation of dreams didn't come from him, but they came from his knowledge of God. Now, this account of Joseph reminds us to remain close to God, to be ready for his opportunities. Now, this doesn't mean opportunities to become a millionaire, but it means opportunities to become fruitful for God, to serve God. Now, this also reminds us to give credit to God when it's necessary. Now, looking back to the story, Joseph interprets the two dreams and explains to Pharaoh that they are one and the same. He explains that there will be 7 years of fruitful abundance, and then there will be 7 years of famine that will cause everyone to forget the 7 years of the abundance. Joseph did what was required of him. And it was not now, it was his time to ask for a favor, right? He interpreted the dreams. He did what Pharaoh asked. Now he's going to get what's his, right? No. No, he doesn't. Because he had the Spirit of God with him. He had great wisdom. He told Pharaoh he needed to look for a wise and discerning man to prepare for the famine. See, in fact, on that spot, Joseph gave Pharaoh a survival plan for the next 14 years. Think about that. Here a man is coming out of dungeon, doing what is asked him of the king, and now he has an opportunity to get out of jail. You know, he did something for the Pharaoh. He can, you know, cash in his favor. But what does he do? He gives wisdom. He tells them how they need to begin to prepare. Truly a selfless man. So he told Pharaoh to take control of all the crops. He told them to store up a fifth or 20% of all the harvests and to keep them in the cities where they are produced. Now, I find this part really interesting because I imagine that there were probably some individuals who were not too thrilled with this idea. Here is a nomadic prisoner now telling people how to live, what needs to be done. I'm sure there were doubters in the land who didn't believe in the famine, didn't believe Joseph, and didn't believe the Egyptian officials. Which is why I think it's interesting that Joseph suggested that the food be taken by the commissioners. Because I'm sure that, like I said, Joseph knew that the Egyptians wouldn't be trusted. He knew that they couldn't be trusted enough to store their food on their own. And, you know, this part of the story, I think, is very reflective of our own culture. Most individuals have a tendency to live within their own expenses. This is also reflective of the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book. In it, he talks about individuals when they're given a promotion, when they make more money, they don't start to save it. They just continue to live within their own expenses. Their lives will always adjust accordingly, whether you're going up or you're going down. And now getting back to Joseph's story, Pharaoh is actually very impressed by Joseph's wisdom. He's saying, can we find anyone like this man, one whom is the spirit of God? Now, at this point, Pharaoh is most likely referring to his gods, but the statement still remains true. See, God gave Joseph a plan for Egypt. In the following verses, we see what remaining faithful to God through all the years of slavery, all the years of imprisonment, and general wrong treatment by family will finally accumulate to. Now, Pharaoh decides to put Joseph in charge of his palace. He becomes the one to give orders, to make the plan for the famine to come. He tells Joseph that all will submit to his orders. He puts him in charge of the whole land, giving him his signet ring. Now, these signet rings were rings that were pretty much a signature of authority. It was Pharaoh's own signature, and it was used by officials as something to seal official documents. Now, this was very equivocal to the Pharaoh telling Joseph to do whatever he pleased, to act in the name of authority. And he is given a new name and wife, just to be more fitting with the Egyptian culture. So now, Joseph made it. Here he is, in the full height of glory, right? So what can he do with this power? Now might be his chance. Maybe he'll go back to Potiphar's wife, right? Get that situation straightened out. Maybe he'll go back to his brothers, right? Saying, remember those years, all those years ago? You guys did me a little wrong. But he doesn't do any of that, because he knows that God has a specific plan for him, so he sticks around. So here Joseph is, probably the quickest and most drastic rags-to-riches stories ever, waking up one day, imprisoned in a dungeon, and the very same day becoming the second most powerful man in the land. He's done it, you know? But like I said, he doesn't take vengeance. He doesn't hold on to that bitterness, right? And again, he rose so quickly, and when he was learning all that he could about what it meant to be in service to God, in his years of training for this position, like I said, he started out as a slave, then he became a prisoner. And in each and every moment, Joseph learned the importance of serving God and in serving others. Now, I want us all to use this as a reminder. Wherever you are in life, whatever the situation, view it as a learning opportunity or a time that God is molding you, training you to serve him in a specific manner. Like I said, Joseph doesn't look to get even with anyone, even though he was horribly mistreated by his own family and wrongfully imprisoned. No, he simply does what God asks of him. Now, Joseph learns to forget early on in his life, learns to forget how people have mistreated him. But it's not the forgetting of the events, but the forgetting of the emotion caused by those events. Now, forgetting of that bitterness. This forgetting is actually a big part of the story. Now, one of Joseph's sons ends up being named Manasseh, meaning God has made me forget. His other son he named Ephraim, meaning God has made me fruitful. Now, it's that forgetting of the resentment is what will cause the being becoming fruitful. Now, earlier I mentioned the hypothetical person who blames the world for their struggles, holding on to the injustices done against them, and carrying the bitterness wherever they go. Now, if you live like this, if you live where you're holding on to how the world did you wrong, how this person mistreated you, you'll never be open for opportunities that God will present you with. And if you are aware of those opportunities and you're still bitter, you'll be scared to take a risk because you'll only be focusing on the failures. You'll only be focusing on how you were mistreated. Then you'll never be promoted. You'll never have a fruitful life like Joseph. Now, the title of this message today is Promoted. In the secular world, we think of promoted as stepping up, having more responsibilities, more pay, maybe a better job. In the biblical sense, in this story, promoted, like similar with secular, is taking on more responsibilities. But it's not simple acts. It's God entrusting you, right? So if you continue to hold on to that bitterness, God will never look to have you serve him. He will never look to you to be a fruitful serving member of his kingdom. So what are you doing here today? Are you holding on to anything? Are you holding on to any resentment that you need to let go of? Are you being open to opportunity? God wants to make you servants. He doesn't want to simply have you be hearers of the word. He wants you to be doers of the word. So how can you mold your life to that? What do you need to let go? What do you need to forget about? And like I said, it's not the events, but it's the emotions. You know, in my class, The Peacemaker, the very common theme was this letting go of. And I think Joseph was very good at that. He knew what it meant to be a peacemaker, although he wasn't a classic version of one, but inside, he had what it took. So I just want to ask you again, what do you need to leave at the door? What do you need to do to become a faithful servant of God for him to say, well done? Let us join and rise, and we'll sing our closing song, How Great is Our God.